part of this is a rejection of Judeo-Christian ethics and moral philosophy that holds that human beings have unique dignity. When you start looking at cattle ranching as if it were slavery, and when you start looking at, as you mentioned, animals as if they were children, not that you don't love your pets, of course, I have a dog, I love my dog, but that's not the same thing as a child, then there's a great deal of confusion sown. And I think that's why it really is important for us to, particularly Orthodox Christians, we do have to look at the nature of life, and we do have to look at the hierarchy of life.
Boy, if that sounds a little politically incorrect, then please stay tuned and give us a chance to adjust that misconception. This is Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. And the specific topic in our feature conversation today is animal rights. But to fit with the old hymn playing in the background, we'll be talking about all creatures of our God and King. Welcome to the broadcast. Well, Wesley J. Smith is a lawyer and author, a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's also a lawyer and consultant for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, and a special consultant for the Center for Bioethics and Culture. In 2004, he was named by the National Journal as one of the nation's top expert thinkers in bioengineering for his work in bioethics, and he is a critic of scientocracy, which is the trend to let the scientists decide what is ethical and what our public policy should be. As an author, he has published several works, the most recent of which is entitled The War on Humans, which came out earlier this year. And Father Chris caught up with him by phone recently.
How are you, Wesley?
Very well, Father. How are you?
Very good, sir. Let's talk about simply what is mankind's responsibility to animals, because we hear about animal rights a lot, but we really don't talk about man's responsibility.
Yeah, and that's an important point. Animal rights is not the same thing as animal welfare. Properly understood, animal rights is an ideology that seeks to create a moral equivalency or a moral equality between the value of animals and the value of human beings. Such organizations such as People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals and some others. Animal welfare, which is a human obligation, certainly, certainly arising out of what I call human exceptionalism, we have the duty to treat animals properly and humanely. And how that is determined will be based on various circumstances. For example, we use animals in medical research. That's an important aspect of advancing science. But that doesn't mean you just do anything you want to an animal, which is why under the Animal Welfare Act, as just one example, we have laws that regulate how animals are to be treated in medical research. The National Institutes of Health have just said they are no longer going to fund animal research using chimpanzees because of the chimpanzees' high intelligence and capacities to suffer. So that's an important issue. It's important in terms of food production. It's important in medical research. It's important in how we take care of pets and so forth. And that is something that that can be handled and should be handled without giving rights, quote-unquote, to animals.
Now, from what you said, I think someone might hit the misconception, maybe it's my misconception, that you are putting the value of the animal on the same line as the value of the human being. Am I right or am I wrong there?
That's in the animal rights movement, which
animal
I oppose.
Rights. Okay.
Animal rights movement does create an explicit moral equivalency or a moral equality between animals and humans. That's not the same thing as animal welfare.
Okay.
When Michael Vick abused those dogs, that was inhumane. It was a violation of our obligation as human beings to treat animals humanely and properly.
Absolutely.
It was not a matter of the rights of the dogs. It was a matter of the duty of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an example of how really twisted the thinking can become when you create an animal rights paradigm, that is, that animals have moral equality with people. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals put out for several years what they called the Holocaust on Your Plate campaign. That is, they were trying to convince people to become vegan, which is not the same thing as vegetarian. Vegan says you make no use of animal product for any purpose, including leather and shoes. Vegetarian can mean many things, but, you know, you restrict meat or sometimes even meat products in your, or animal products in your diet. But this is what they said. They a very disturbing imagery, Father. They had pictures of the inmates at Auschwitz and in the death camps in those horrible bunks, juxtaposed next to pictures of chickens in cages.
Oh, my gosh.
Even more disturbingly, they had pictures of dead inmates after the liberation of the death camps, piles of dead inmates, juxtaposed next to pictures of pigs, dead pigs. Now, imagine, we're talking about Jewish people here, which doubles the disgusting imagery there. And here's one of the things they wrote. The leather sofa and handbag, I'm quoting, "The leather sofa and handbag are the modern equivalent of the lampshades made from the skins of the people killed in the death camps." Father, I've been to Auschwitz. I've been to Birkenau. I've stood in a gas chamber. I've walked that odious train terminus where Jews were separated for slave labor or immediate extermination. And any advocacy group that can't distinguish between animal husbandry and one of the worst evils ever perpetrated against human beings seems to me has no credibility and no business preaching morality to anyone.
I'm getting a real education here. Right now in the West, we really have a bizarre situation, Wesley, where animals are treated like, well, I have to tell you, babies. They're dressed up in clothes. They even have their nails painted, and they're kissed and hugged. And I'm not an animal hater. Right? I have a dog. I had a dog. We've had, turtles and rabbits and pigs and roosters. So I know what the animals are. But the animals are for a purpose, and the human being is for a purpose. And the respect of both is what I think we're getting at here. So I'm excited to have this conversation. Now, we do know that animals are abused.
Yes.
We do know that some in the mass production of food do abuse the animals. And I think what we're calling for here is something more of a respect of the animal, correct?
Yes, and you're talking about industrial farming.
Yes.
Industrial methods of producing food. And I've had trouble determining the exact extent to which some of that food production might be abusive. I don't believe animal rights activists because of their agenda, and I also find it difficult to gain good information from the food industry. In my book, A Rat is a Pig is a Dog is a Boy, I basically describe some of the issues that might come about in terms of looking at that, for example, the price of food. Let me just give you an example. In my local grocery store, I buy personally eggs that are from cage-free chickens because I think that's a more humane approach. But the eggs I buy, let's say they cost $3.50 to $4 a dozen, whereas unlabeled eggs, which probably means they come from eggs, chickens kept in these cages or these baskets or whatever, cost $1.59, $1.99. Now, if I'm a poor person wanting to give good, nutritious food to my family, I'm probably going to buy the $1.99 a dozen eggs rather than the $3.59 or $4 a dozen eggs because that's the best I can do. So the question becomes, one, in terms of these methods, what is the human benefit? And I think this is a general welfare approach. What human benefit do we derive from the use of the animal in the particular way we're looking at? Secondly, we look at what kind of ways, how are the animals being treated? Are they being treated humanely or not? And obviously, if they're not being treated humanely, that's a very serious situation that needs to be addressed. If they're not being treated humanely, we have to try to help the egg farmer or the meat raiser find ways to produce the food from the animal in a way that's not as abusive, and hopefully doesn't raise prices too high. It's a very nuanced and difficult issue. And so I don't think you can say, well, we don't believe in industrial methods, On the other hand, we can say we don't want industrial methods where if, let's say, pigs are kept so close to each other, they have sores on their bodies. And I've heard charges of that, although I have also talked to pig farmers, and they tell me that's not true. I think this is a proper area for government regulation. I would like to see a dispassionate, objective investigation into what kind of methods we do use with veterinarians and people who are expert and not pushing either one side of the agenda, the animal rights agenda, or just saying, well, the only thing that matters is cheap food, because that's not the only thing that matters. It's a very difficult issue, and I think we have to look at it squarely.
Well, you're asking for balance, and yes, we know that in this world it's tough to find balance.
Yes.
So let's look for a minute at that. I mean, we know that from Scripture everything is created by God, and it's created by God for a purpose, and that God put the man and then the woman on this earth to rule over that creation, but to then protect it and to perpetuate it.
Yes.
Unto time eternity. Now, the problem we're having is there's just so much confusion.
Yes.
We no longer know, well, the man or the woman. We no longer look to see what is the purpose of our existence, what are we destined for. Therefore, it stands to reason, to me at least, that this confusion does come about.
And I think, Father, you're right. Part of this is a rejection of Judeo-Christian ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And moral philosophy that holds that human beings have unique dignity, even though that is the philosophy that has brought so much prosperity and freedom into the world, particularly in the developed world. When you start looking at cattle ranching as if it were slavery, and when you start looking at, as you mentioned, animals as if they were children, not that you don't love your pets, of course,
mm-hmm.
I have
yeah.
a dog, I love my dog, but that's not the same thing as a child, then there's a great deal of confusion sown. And I think that's why it really is important for us to, particularly Orthodox Christians, in the micro level, but mm-hmm. I think generally, we do have to look at the nature of life, and we do have to look at the hierarchy of life. Sometimes people ask me, and my work is not in terms of Orthodox advocacy, I work in the secular world, and my books are written for the general population. But I'm sometimes, if I appear on religious shows, asked, well, what about, our duty as stewards?
Mm-hmm.
And I say our duty isn't to nature. For example, there's now a push for nature rights. We don't owe a fiduciary obligation to nature. We owe a fiduciary obligation as stewards to God, right?
Sure.
Because the steward answers to the master. The steward doesn't answer to the natural resource that he or she is managing. And of course, if we keep our eye on that idea, and if we, one of the things that, I'm a convert, one of the things that I find most remarkable about Orthodoxy is our call to humility. And I think that is part of this. We need to have humility in the face of the power that human beings have, and that means we will exercise it responsibly, including the power we have over animals.
Let me ask you this. I mean, in your opinion, what is the path to a more balanced and Christian approach to the way we treat animals? How do you see it?
I think it's to first of all, embrace the unique nature of man. We are the only species, if you will use that term, that has rights properly understood. But that also, that isn't the end of it. A lot of people will say, well, human exceptionalism means you're hubristic and you think you can do anything you want. That's quite the contrary. A big part of what makes humans special and unique is that we are the only moral agents in the material world that we know of. We are the only ones who understand right versus wrong. We are moral agents.
Yeah.
There is, and if we take that seriously, that's when we will look at our duties, our solemn duties, not to be abusive to animals, and as we've prospered, by the way, of course, if you're in a mode of I have to survive, you're not thinking about these kinds of issues. We have the ability to think about these kinds of issues because we have prospered so well, and that certainly, because we've been so blessed, that certainly gives us the obligation to focus on how we can treat other life on the planet in a responsible manner. I once spoke, I was really privileged to speak at St. Tikhon's Seminary mm-hmm. about some of these issues. And I don't know if you've been out in that area of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
It's the only time I was there, and there's some ponds nearby, and I was walking down the road, and I saw a dead beaver in the road. And I felt badly, which is a unique kind of human characteristic, isn't it? I felt empathy for the dead beaver. And then I thought, well, you know, the beaver builds a dam. It's a completely different thing than human beings building Hoover Dam.
Hmm.
There is a distinction, a moral difference between us and animals, but that's what gives us the obligation to treat them properly. I mean, if being human in and of itself isn't what gives us that obligation, what does?
Very true. Let's ask you one final question. How can each of us start being part of the solution rather than just talking around the problem?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think being part of the solution involves discernment. It involves discerning the difference between advocacy agendas that actually diminish the value of human beings and reduce us to just another animal in the forest, so to speak, and those solutions that offer human duty and allows us to embrace our unique natures. So I think we need to educate ourselves. I think we need to not be completely swayed by the emotion of the moment. There's too much I feel and not enough I think these days.
Hmm.
And I think we need to think, work out the principles. And the point of principles is that when the issue comes about, that we are prepared to deal with it instead of just having to rely on our feelings of the moment. I think that perhaps the church should engage these issues to help people kind of distinguish between the forest and the trees, to see what is a proper approach to animal use of animals, environmental responsibility, and so forth, versus those kind that kind of pushes toward a neo-pagan idea of life.
A unique conversation today with Wesley. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Father.
Again, Father Chris has been talking with Wesley J. Smith, and I mentioned Wesley's latest book, The War on Humans. It's available through our website at myocn.net. Just click on the Buy button on the homepage, which will take you to our online web store, and it will also link you to Amazon.com, and any purchase you make on Amazon while going through our web store will generate a donation back to the ministry. It's kind of a neat arrangement and a great way for you to help the outreach of the Orthodox Christian Network. Again, that's MyOCN, and click on the Buy button. Well, our second conversation today is going to be shortened just a bit because of the time limitations we have on this broadcast. The good news, however, is that we have a link on the website, myocn.net, to the entire discussion. And you will find that link on our page for Come Receive the Light. Just go to myocn.net, select Listen on the homepage, and choose CRTL, or Come Receive the Light.
It's a pleasure to have author Leslie Leland Fields back on the show today. She's here to talk about her latest book, Forgiving Our Fathers and Mothers, Finding Freedom from Hurt and Hate. Oh boy, this is going to be some conversation. I wonder if you could share with us briefly about your journey and the forgiving of a parent, and I guess that's what led to writing this book.
Yes, it did. The book tells the story of my forgiveness of my father, from whom I was alienated most of my life, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I got a phone call one day that from my sister that my father had fallen down and been taken to the hospital. He had a weak heart. He wasn't expected to live more than a year or two. And that was kind of an arrow through my heart. And I realized I didn't have a relationship with my father. He did not love us as children. I came from a family of six children. And he was not attentive. He gave us very little time. He had very little interest in us. He was gone a lot, and as it turned out, I didn't know this until years later, there was also sexual abuse that was going on in our home by my father.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were also very, very poor because my father was unable to keep a job. So there are all of these. These are all the reasons that I left home, and from New Hampshire to Alaska, I went, you know, as far away as possible, and just, you know, my father was not a part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So my, you know, I found out that my father doesn't have much longer to live, and you know, I'm a believer, and I knew all of these verses about forgiveness. I knew that forgiveness is commanded. I had just never connected that with my father. I had just kind of shut my father just completely out of my life, out of my heart, and obviously out of the gospel.
Now, we know that when things happen in life that walls go up, and sometimes they're cement walls, and sometimes they're thin wooden walls that we can push our hands through. And we know also how difficult life can be. We all live in the same mud pit of life. We all are subject to the same sins and temptations. And the question is, what kind of path are we going to cut individually? Scripture tells us to honor our father and our mother. How can we do that even after significant hurt, such as the one you went through, has occurred, whether that hurt's a one-time thing or something that's gone on for years?
Yeah, and that's such an important question, because there it is. God wrote it with his finger on the tablets of stone to Moses and to all of us for all time. Honor your father and mother. And there's no qualifying phrase there. You know, God doesn't say honor them only if they're honorable.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we face this dilemma. And I think, the first thing that we have to remember is that we, just as you say, we are all together in this sort of mud pit that life sometimes is, and that we are sinners too, and that we do not always act honorably ourselves. And I think it's really important that we recognize that standing before God, this father and this mother and or our stepfather or, you know, whoever this person is in our life, we are equally guilty before God.
Mm-hmm.
We have sinned equally, heinously before God. And God has extended his mercy toward us. And that is the basis of forgiveness, for us extending that mercy and that honor toward that other parent. So I think it's really clear that we don't get to choose, you know, who we show honor to and who we don't show honor to. God has made it clear you are to honor your mother and father. And, you know, and God's going to take care of the rest. God's going to take care of justice. He's going to take care of fairness. And we need to do our part and honor as best we can, as best we know how.
Many people who sever their relationships with an abusive or dysfunctional parent after, they suffer enormous amounts of guilt and sometimes even self-doubt. Are those feelings indicative that the decision was necessarily wrong, or they simply reflect how deep the hurt is?
Yeah, you know, the second part of that, I think it does reflect the deepness of the wounds from an abusive parent, from a really hurtful parent. And, you know, it's very important that people not have the expectation that, you know, when I forgive or as I begin this process of forgiveness, that that's immediately going to heal and wipe away all the memories. They'll all be gone. I won't experience hurt anymore. No, we're just not made that way. We're human flesh,
mm-hmm.
and we have memory, and there, you know, there may be some hurt that will remain and that will resurface. But I think over time, you know, as we continue to practice forgiveness, and it's not just a one-time thing. It's not just, okay, I'm going to say the words, and you know, and it's all done. You know, the process is complete. I think as often as those memories and hurts return, we forgive again. We release them again. We release that person and we release that hurt again. What happens over time is the power of that person and the power of those hurts over us diminishes. It diminishes, And I think eventually it goes away entirely. But we should be real about this process and recognize it's going to be probably a gradual diminishment over time.
No, I think that's a very good point. It does take time, and time has a way of not necessarily healing it, but also putting things into perspective so we can put our emotions aside and our hurt aside and try to look at the person and say, okay, now how do I parse through this issue? How do I deal with it? It's been a fascinating conversation. What's one thing you'd really like to share with anyone out there who's struggling to forgive a parent?
I would say start the forgiveness journey by faith. Mm-hmm. And right now, it's probably hard to imagine and hard to take that first step. And I'm asking them, start this by faith. And yes, it's hard, but God will walk with you. And let the gospel widen your eyes to see that hurtful person with compassion. And watch others who have forgiven to see what that looks like. And that's, Father, that's why I wrote this book, for people to not only hear about forgiveness, but to see what it looks like in real people, in real people's lives. And I think when we do that and move forward in forgiveness, we're going to see the heart of God in a way that we've never seen before.
Leslie, thank you very much for joining us. Leslie Leyland Fields, she is the author of Forgiving Our Fathers and Mothers, Finding Freedom from Hurt and Hate. Thank you.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
And that's another resource you can find on our website through our web store. Just go to the website myocn.net, click on the Buy button on the homepage, and that should open up or at least give you access to the web store, and you'll find the book there. Again, the title, Forgiving Our Fathers and Mothers, Finding Freedom from Hurt and Hate. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. Thanks, as always, for joining us on this another edition of Come Receive the Light. We'll be back next week. I hope you can come along as well, and you'll tell your friends about Come Receive the Light and MyOCN. Thanks, as always, to our executive producer, Ann Dankert, and remember to always have faith in what you listen to.